When Margaret Delander went to live at Brent Rock, the whole neighbourhood awoke to the pleasure of an entirely new scandal. The Delanders had an ancient record and were proud of it in their way, as the Brents were of theirs. But the family had never risen above yeomanry, and although they had once been well-to-do, their fortunes had withered. In process of time, all disappeared, leaving only two in the croft, Wickham Delander and his sister Margaret. The man and woman seemed to have inherited the evil tendency of their race, sharing in common the principles of sullen passion, voluptuousness, and recklessness. The history of the Brents had been something similar, but showing the causes of decadence in their aristocratic and not their plebeian forms. The present head of the family was Geoffrey Brent. So long as Geoffrey confined his dissipations to London and Paris and Vienna, opinion was silent. But when the scandal came close home, it was another matter. Wickham Delander had quarrelled with his sister, and they were on terms not merely of armed neutrality, but of bitter hatred. And in the end, Wickham, overcome with passion, had ordered his sister to leave his house. Some weeks passed, and it was understood in the neighbourhood that Margaret had gone to London. When she suddenly appeared, driving out with Geoffrey Brent, and the entire neighbourhood knew before nightfall that she had taken up her abode at the Rock. Neither Margaret nor Geoffrey was of a pacific temperament, and it was not long before there began to be quarrels between them. They made occasional absences from Brent's Rock, but there came a time when the absence became longer than before. Only a few days earlier, there had been a quarrel, more bitter than any which had preceded it. But this had been made up, and a trip on the continent had been mentioned before the servants. Week after week went by, and month after month. And then there came a rumour that an accident had occurred in the Zermatt Valley. Whilst crossing a dangerous pass, the carriage containing an English lady and the driver had fallen over a precipice, the gentleman of the party, Mr. Geoffrey Brent, having been fortunately saved as he had been walking up the hill to ease the horses. He gave information, and search was made. The broken rail, the marks where the horses had struggled on the decline before finally pitching over into the torrent, all told the sad tale. Finally, the wreck of the carriage and the body of one horse were found in an eddy of the river. Later on, the body of the driver was found, but the body of the lady, like that of the other horse, had disappeared. Wickham Delander made all the inquiries possible, but could not find any trace of the missing woman. He found, however, in the books of the various hotels, the name of Mr. and Mrs. Geoffrey Brent, and he had a stone erected at Zermatt to his sister's memory under her married name. There was a lapse of nearly a year. Brent was still absent, and Delander more drunken, more morose, and more revengeful than before. Then there was a new excitement. Brent Rock was being made ready for a new mistress. Then a small army of workmen invaded the house. Scaffolding poles and boards were brought in and laid on one side of the great hall, and also a great wooden tank for mixing the lime, which was laid in bags beside it. When the new mistress of Brent Rock arrived, the bells of the church rang out. She was a beautiful creature, and the few English words which she had learned were spoken in such a way that she won the hearts of the people almost as much by the music of her voice as by the melting beauty of her dark eyes. And so months passed, and the whisper grew that at last Brent's Rock was to have an heir. Geoffrey was very tender to his wife, and the new bond between them seemed to soften him. All the time, Wickham Delander nursed his revenge. One night, he sat alone in the living room of his house. He had been drinking heavily for some time and was more than half stupefied. Presently he sank into a daze, but suddenly awoke to see standing before him someone or something like a battered, ghostly edition of his sister. The woman before him, with distorted features and burning eyes, seemed hardly human, and the only thing that seemed a reality of his sister was her wealth of golden hair, now streaked with grey.
"Why are you here? You're dead and buried."
"I am here, Wickham Delander, for no love of you, but because I hate another even more than I do you." A great passion blazed in her eyes. "Did he marry you? I have come here tonight simply to let you know that I am alive, so that if any violence be done me where I am going, there may be a witness."
"Where are you going?"
"That is my affair."
Wickham stood up, but the drink was on him, and he reeled and fell. As he lay on the floor, he told her that he would follow her through the darkness by the light of her hair and of her beauty. At this, she turned on him and said that there were others beside him that would rue her hair and her beauty too.
"As he will," she hissed, "for the hair remains, though the beauty be gone. When he withdrew the linchpin and sent us over the precipice into the torrent, he had little thought of my beauty."
And with a fierce gesture, she flung open the door and passed out into the night. Later on that night, Mrs. Brent became suddenly awake and spoke to her husband.
"Geoffrey, was not that the click of a lock somewhere below our window?"
But Geoffrey, though she thought that he too had started at the noise, seemed sound asleep and breathed heavily. Again Mrs. Brent dozed, but this time awoke to the fact that her husband had arisen and was partially dressed. He was deadly pale. She was frightened at the look in his eyes.
"What is it, Geoffrey?" she asked.
Go to sleep. I am restless and wish to finish some work I left undone."
He went out, closing the door behind him. She lay awake for a while, and then nature asserted itself and she slept. Suddenly she started broad awake, with the memory in her ears of a smothered cry from somewhere not far off. There was a long pause of silence, and then the sound of some iron implement striking muffled blows. Then there came a clang of a heavy stone falling, followed by a muffled curse. She heard a curious sort of scraping sound, and then there was silence. Presently the door opened gently and Geoffrey appeared. His wife pretended to be asleep, but through her eyelashes she saw him wash from his hands something white that looked like lime. In the morning he made no allusion to the previous night, and she was afraid to ask any questions. From that day, the old hall seemed to have some kind of fascination for him. He used to go there many times in the day, but grew impatient if anyone, even his wife, entered it. The builder's foreman came to inquire about continuing his work.
I see, sir, there's a bit of damage which our people must have done, but the governor will, of course, see it set right at his own cost."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, that here hearth stone, sir, some idiot must have put a scaffold pole on it and cracked it right down the middle."
"Tell your people that I am not going on with the work in the hall at present. I want to leave it as it is for a while longer."
So the foreman went away, and his comment to his master was,
"I'd send the bill, sir, for the work already done. Appears to me that money's a little shaky in that quarter."
That night, when Geoffrey went into the hall, he bent down over the broken hearthstone. Then, with a groan of anguish, he sank to his knees. There, sure enough, through the crack in the broken stone, were protruding a multitude of threads of golden hair tinged with grey. He was disturbed by a noise at the door, and looking round, saw his wife standing in the doorway. He lit a match at the lamp, stooped down and burned away the hair that rose through the broken stone. Then, rising nonchalantly, he pretended surprise at seeing his wife beside him. One evening, his wife came into the hall after her drive and found him there, sitting moodily by the deserted fireplace.
"Geoffrey, I have been spoken to by that fellow Delander, and he says horrible things. He tells to me that a week ago his sister returned to his house. He asked me where she is, and, oh, Geoffrey, she's dead. She's dead. So how can she have returned?"
For answer, Geoffrey burst into a torrent of blasphemy which made her shudder, but suddenly stopped as he saw a new look of terror in his wife's eyes. He followed their glance, and then he too shuddered. For there, on the broken hearthstone, lay a golden streak as the point of the hair rose through the crack.
"Look, look," she shrieked. "Is it some ghost of the dead? Come away, come away."
That night, she was in a raging fever. The doctor of the district attended her at once. Geoffrey was in despair and almost forgot his own crime and its consequences. In the evening, the doctor left Geoffrey in charge of his wife.
"Remember, you must humour her till I come in the morning. What you have to dread is another attack of emotion."
Late in the evening, when the rest of the household had retired, Geoffrey's wife got up from her bed and called to her husband.
"Come," she said, "come to the old hall. I know where the gold comes from. I want to see it grow."
Geoffrey would fain have stopped her, but he feared for her life or reason, and seeing that it was useless to try to prevent her, wrapped a warm rug around her and went with her to the old hall. When they entered, she turned and shut the door and locked it.
"We want no strangers amongst us three tonight,"
she whispered with a wan smile.
"We three... nay, we are but two," said Geoffrey with a shudder.
"Sit here," said his wife as she put out the light. "Sit here by the hearth and watch the gold growing. The silver moonlight is jealous. See, it steals along the floor toward the gold, our gold."
Geoffrey looked with growing horror, and saw that during the hours that had passed, the golden hair had protruded further through the broken hearthstone.
"Now, do not stir, dear," she said. "Let us sit still and watch. We shall find the secret of the growing gold."
He passed his arm round her and sat silent. And as the moonlight stole along the floor, she sank to sleep. Before his horror-struck eyes, the golden hair from the broken stone grew and grew. And as it increased, so his heart got colder and colder, till at last he had not power to stir, and sat with eyes full of terror, watching his doom. In the morning they were found by the servants. There by the deserted hearth, Geoffrey Brent and his young wife sat cold and white and dead. Her face was peaceful and her eyes were closed in sleep. But his face was a sight that made all who saw it shudder. The eyes were open and stared glassily at his feet, which were twined with tresses of golden hair streaked with grey, which came through the broken hearthstone.